Hey guys, and welcome to the latest episode of Dad Knows Best. Episode 54, if my notes are not mistaken, because we do one of these a month now, and I tend to forget things fairly quickly. I am Harrison Mudge, proud father of one, and today we're not with Adam Callow. We have a new proud father to my right. We have a Mr. Steve Smith, father of four.
Just have a look at your notes, mate.
Well, I actually had to update my notes, so I don't trust them too much in the first place. That's why I don't write too many of them, because I tend to talk a lot of shit.
Father of four girls, yeah.
Four girls, mate.
Okay, can I just say, though, like, I'm really into the podcasting, and I've been really privileged to interview some really cool people in the last 8 months, but I feel like I've made it today.
Well, Thank you. You really have, because the millions of people that are watching on YouTube, then we've got the billions of people that download the show.
Mate.
One day. It's archival right now, you see. For anyone that is new to the show, this is basically, normally it's me and Adam on the mics. We just chew the fat talking about being parents. We share tips, pop tips, knowledge, advice. Whether you should follow it or not is very debatable. Everything comes with an asterisk, Steve. So any advice that you give today is always, like we say, take it with a big old grain of salt.
Yeah, full of those whips today.
Yeah, so let's just dive straight into you, man. Well, just before we do, actually, let me talk about me first.
A quick update
on the boy. He's 11 months now. We're in October. He'll be one on the 21st of October.
That's mad.
It's fucking crazy.
That's
like
quick.
No word of a lie, probably for the past 2 or 3 months, I've been saying, well, for the past 2 months at least, I've been saying, oh, he's like 8 months. He's like 8 months. And I'm like, that can't be right, because it's only like 1 month until he's one. So
I do that, mate. My youngest's three now.
She's going to start walking soon. But yeah, so like shit is just, it just goes by real fast.
Yeah.
Scary fast. And like people that have been listening for a while, I try and make sure that I'm spending time. It's really hard, but like you'll always like get your phone up and stuff like that. But I try and as best I can try and make conscious decisions not to be distracted. But we all do it. But yeah. So yeah. So next month's episode, if there's not another one between them, I'll be telling people about the first birthday experience, which we're sort of prepped for, which is very unlike me. Very unlike me.
It's such a journey, though, isn't it? Like from baby birth to one.
Like, they change so fast. Like, I managed to film him when he first started crawling as well. And, like, you can see, like, when you think about what they've gone from and where they get to in the space of 12 months, it's scary.
Yeah. It's
amazing. I mean, hopefully it slows down, right?
No. So when they get to three, then they're like 16.
Yeah. And then they're telling you what to do.
Exactly that. I'm practically told in my house what to do by everyone.
Cool. So let's just dive into that, man. What is it? First of all, what is it like having four kids, full stop?
Yeah.
And then four girls. Like, I don't know if you know what it's like, or if you spoke to anyone that's got four boys or like a mix or anything. Because for me anyway, having a boy, I assume, is a little easier because you've got something to relate to, right? It's like, it's just a small, it's a smaller version of you. Just treat it how you would expect to treat yourself, sort of thing.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, with my friends, most of them have got boys, to be fair, and they always say, like, oh, don't you want a boy? And I'm just like, well, actually, like, no. I'm really comfortable with, like, the girls. You have to adapt every day.
Yeah.
It's like a learning curve every day. But genuinely, I think I let them do as they wish. Like, I went to the hospital this week, and I forgot that they'd put toenail polish on me. So I had to get my foot out. I was just like, I've got four girls at home. Yeah. They're like, yeah, right.
I swear.
But I don't know, man. They say it takes a real man to have girls. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's hard work, but it's cool.
Yeah. When you say it's hard work, is it hard work because you've got four, or is it hard work because they're girls, or
I think it's hard work with four, full stop. I work, Jen works, so it's tough. I think Jen does like really the majority of everything, really. But
what are their ages? Sorry.
So you got Ethel's my youngest. If she was the first, I would never have had any more. She's a terror, really. And then you got Florence, who's five. So Ethel's three, Florence is five. Molly was 15 this week,
wow.
And Lily's just turned 16, which is Lily is like a fucking nightmare. If Lily was how I was when I was 16, I feel sorry for my parents.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because my mum says the same thing about my little brother as well, Ollie. She says that if he was the first, he would have been the last because he was a nightmare as a baby, apparently.
Yeah.
Because when they look after Elliot, they say that he's so easy. Like, obviously, we don't know any different. We see obviously more of him than they do. So they only get the best bits right because they only have to deal with him for a day.
You can hand him back.
But when we actually think about like putting him to bed and stuff, we literally put him in. He might stir a little bit, but light goes out, shut the door, and within like 5-10 minutes, he's asleep and pretty much sleeps through the night now.
Yeah. Well, Florence and Ethel will get up about 10 times because they need a toilet, apparently. But they're just like running across the landing. Eventually, they'll go to sleep. Yeah. And then, like, you're trying to go to bed. And then, like, Lily and Molly are still, like, having chats at, like, 11 at night. So thank God for that screen time thing. So, because like, then well,
do you have that thing where you can, like, you can turn it off from your phone? Do you have, like, one of those family accounts? So you can
So obviously, I'm the master of that. Yeah. Take that. I personally, though, I find it so important that they have that. Like, so with Lily especially, like, she resists it a little bit. And I understand it because all of her friends have it 24 hours. But I try and say to her, you need to ask your friends why they feel like it's important to have it all that time. As time's going on, I don't really like social media. I think it's vital, I think, for what we do. But I don't like a lot of aspects for the younger generations.
Yeah, big time. Have you seen The Social Dilemma on Netflix?
Yes.
That's like, I mean, it was super interesting. And when, so Adam and Sam told me about it and said I should watch it. And the way they explained it, I thought it was like a bit more of a documentary, but like a lot more information of like, these are how the systems work and just like sort of factual.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was going to be like really ominous overtones and just like it had a real spin on it, which was like negative, but
it's quite dark, I think.
Yeah, and I think with everything, that anything used in the right way is good,
of course. Yeah,
but they use it in the program. They use the analogy of like a tool will just sort of sit there patiently, whereas social media, not just social media, but like devices in general, always asking for your attention. Whereas tools just wait for you to use them. So just thought that was an interesting analogy. But yeah, even in that, they highlight like the effect on young kids.
100%.
Like my generation was just on the cusp. So like we've been through the majority of school without social media, and then obviously you have MySpace and Bebo and all that shit.
I love MySpace.
I remember the chaos that you saw on people's pages, because couldn't you just like edit it in any way possible?
You could do whatever you wanted with MySpace.
It was just an absolute clusterfuck. Like, some people would just do that much to the page that you'd click on the profile, just crash the computer.
Yeah, it's like fireworks and everything. Yeah, I miss them days.
Yeah.
But it's, so like with the teenagers, I find it really interesting. Every day is like a learning curve, really. My eldest Lily, because obviously now she's into GCSE year this year, so she's really stressed, so we get that. And then obviously we get that projected onto her. So sometimes it's really hard to manage. We have to be like mindful of that. And, you know, I'd say we've done an all right job, Harry, really. But yeah, Lily especially, they all worry me, but like Lily being 16 and I find it a really vulnerable age, and she's kind of in between. So she runs and she's a very good runner, but it has its negative effect. So she will train 4 times a week. So on a Friday when her school friends, if you like, are arranging nights out, you know, and sleepovers, COVID permitting, obviously.
Yeah.
Lily won't be included in that because she knows she's got training on Saturday, so she can't do it. So it isolates her a little bit.
Are they not including her, or is she not including herself?
No, so it's nothing that they—it's nothing that they do. But obviously, you know, if you ask me 10 times to come out, and I'm like, "No, I ain't coming out," eventually you will stop. Mm-hmm. So they kind of just think Lily's not gonna.
Sure.
You know, for me, I look at it and I think it's really hard for her now. But those decisions, when she's older, might pay off. But then, you know, she'll go to the running club, and because she's quite good, she runs with like the under 20s and not her own age group. So then when these girls are going off to uni, then she's kind of you know, stuck again.
Mm.
And Lily's not overly academic, so. But then, yeah, I can. There's loads, because then Molly, 15, like, she'll sit at home, mate. She's just like writing cards, everything, because she's like, she literally during lockdown, she can speak really good French now. It's amazing. What? Like, she literally just done cards and cards every single day.
Is that, was that from school though? Is that just like sort of self-taught, or she just?
No, so yeah, so in school she's, you know, she's really good at French. Like, when, you know, she gets a lot of things sent home about her French work and stuff like that. So she just took it upon herself. She just wants to be a nurse, but she wants to travel a little bit. She likes French and she likes the place, France. So yeah, she's just took it upon herself. So you've got these really two different. Yeah. Characters, and then when they're together, it's fucking carnage. And then you've got the little ones running around and Ethel punching everyone. And
yeah, yeah. I remember me and my older brother. So he's, how old am I? I'm 31. He's 34-ish. Mm. So similar sort of ages. But we would get on until we didn't for a long time, and then we'd just fight.
Yeah,
like we'd wrestle in the house all the time and just attack each other. And like, my brother just knew how to wind me up just by looking at me. Even like over dinner, he'd just give me a look and I'd be like, stop looking at me. And then it was just like trying to flip the table and throw things at each other. But it was only when I turned 18, it's almost like we both became old enough to like appreciate each other as people, as opposed to just annoying siblings. So
yeah.
So I'm sure that friction will.
I think at the end of the day, like, you know, again, they won't walk to school together, even though they're going in the same direction. Mm-hmm. But I think when it really comes down to it, they're there for each other, and that's enough.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, you they know the family.
100%.
They just annoy the hell out of each other.
100%. Florence and Ethel are at this stage now, where so Sam could be on TV and they're saying what character they are. And then it turns into this big eruption because they both want to be the same character. You hear Jen shouting, going like, none of you are them characters. And in the background, I'm going, no, I'm that character.
You're Daddy,
not.
No!
Daddy, you're not that character. Yes, I am. You don't even know who they are, Dan.
Tell them, Mum.
But there's a lot of that. So it's like, you know, Lily will say sometimes, like, oh, it's just like having a big brother, Mum. Do you know what I mean? So probably I don't help everything.
Oh, dear, that's cool. That's cool. It's interesting. Where did the for me, when I was at school, if I could not learn, sweet.
Mm.
Where's that academic side come from?
Jen.
Is it?
Yeah, not me at all. When I was at school, I was signed with a pro club. So it was like, if my teacher said I was going to make it as a footballer, so I never bothered.
Yeah.
In hindsight, it's just so stupid. But yeah, academic, Jen's, yeah, pretty clever, really, to be fair. So yeah, she can take credit for all
that. What does Jen do?
Accounts.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I imagine it's nice.
Boring, she says. Yeah. But yeah, it's, yeah, I couldn't do it. Can't even do my own books, Harry, let alone.
What is the, what's the situation with school at the moment? Obviously, we're in like whatever the fuck the decisions are whatever with the government at the moment with lockdown. But like, are they getting forced to do like curriculums at home and stuff? Or what's the deal with that?
No, so like they're all at school. So that was interesting. The other day, Lily messaged us and said that a girl in that year had come into school and I think she'd had a test. And then during school, she got told that she had COVID. So they locked down like year 11, and then they had to work out who had been in the classes. So then I think Lily ended up sitting with about four people in her form because everyone else had been in certain classes with her. So they got sent home to isolate. But my take on it then was, well, Lily's been sitting with her form.
Yeah.
So where does it end? I don't know. It's a minefield for them. And
yeah, I mean,
it's hard.
It's difficult, and you wouldn't want to have to make those decisions yourself. But it is also fucking confusing as hell.
Well, they've not made it easy, have they? But
no. So let's rewind a little bit, all the way back. I mean, you've got four birth experiences. Maybe don't dive into every one of them super detailed, but like, was there any any that stood out, for lack of a better term? Like for me, well, for Emmy, she had like high blood pressure and stuff. So for us, we had a whole plan of like, so she got into like positive birthing, which was great. It gave her a good mental state to be in and look at the whole thing as a really positive experience, which was great. But what happened was, because of high blood pressure, what we wanted and what we had to have were two very different things, because she was hoping for a midwife-led birth, not even in a hospital, in one of the other wings where it's just midwives and it's like 20 minutes away from the hospital.
Okay.
But because of high blood pressure, they said, you're not having that anymore. You've got to be in the hospital. We've got to induce you and everything. So it kind of, everything felt like it went south at the last minute, and it was quite stressful. And then she had to stay in hospital after the fact. What have been your experiences through each of the births? Were they all...
We've been very lucky, I think, yeah. Harry, when you explain it like that. So, I mean, for me, the most enjoyable experience, if you like, I mean, Jen's had to go through it all, but was Ethel. And we, you know, finally was... I never really wanted a home birth.
Mm-hmm.
I was always really panicked that, so say something goes wrong and stuff like that. Yeah. But Ethel we had at home, and we had three midwives there, and to be honest... You know, Jen was in the living room. I could make tea for everyone, and so I felt like.
So that was a decision to have the home birth.
Yeah, that was a decision to have a home birth, and you know, once Ethel had come along and everything was fine, they just, you know, they pack up and they leave you to yourselves, like, you know. So Ethel really really enjoyed Ethel's, if you like, but all four have been relatively easy. I mean, Molly, I think it was about 45 minutes. You know, like we went in at like 4, and then by about 6:30, Jen had had her tea and toast, put her makeup on, and she was ready to go home.
Jeez.
So we've been very lucky.
Yeah.
You know, we've been very lucky. I mean, you know, we did have one miscarriage in between Florence and Ethel. You know, it wasn't meant to be for whatever that is, but that's why Ethel's our rainbow baby, if you like. I mean, how we ended up with 4, Harry, was... Lily and Molly were like peas in a pod. Like, you know, they've grown up together there, now they bicker, but... You know, they've always done stuff together, and then we ended up with Florence, and it was kind of like Lily and Molly would be, they're really good with them, to be fair, but they're off and doing their own thing, and then Florence is sitting there, so then we decided to one more. So that's no more now, though.
my little brother's, what's the age difference? So he's 17 at the moment, whereas obviously me and Jack are 30 plus, so there was quite an age difference between us, but I guess we were just old enough by the time he sort of came of age that we're now older brothers that are sort of grown adults. That's obviously a bit of a different dynamic because they're still kids, right?
Yeah,
still younger teenagers. But yeah, it's from my point of view, having a younger brother, it's been quite nice to share wisdom, as it were, because you can kind of, because he's going through the stage at the moment where he's had his first girlfriend, and for anyone that's watching, it's gone black in here. There we go. So he's had the whole first girlfriend, first breakup, and stuff like that. So that's it. Weirdly, it's been nice to like be there and support and like give your advice and stuff, because everyone knows what all that shit's like.
It's horrible, man. I wouldn't want to do that again.
Yeah,
that's invaluable though. I think for him, like having you and your brother to lean on in that respect, I think we'll stand in well as well, won't it, I think.
Yeah, and we're quite a close family, and you can in general anyway, so but he's definitely, we can tell that, because me and Jack talk about it all the time, he definitely takes what we say on board, obviously. We've all been able to speak to our parents about anything, but there's sometimes, as close as you might be to your mum and dad, you can't necessarily tell them things all the time, can you? So having older brothers or sisters is just a nice sort of thing to have.
Definitely. What about, if you don't mind me asking, with ME and obviously with the high blood pressure and stuff like that, would that put you off having any more? I don't want to put you on the spot.
No. I think, don't hold me to this, but I think the plan would be to have another one at some point, definitely. Obviously, that is like it's a worry, because we were both like we were both hoping that everything would be easy.
Yeah.
Easy and easy-ish. We knew, obviously, that it's never just, well, it sounds like some people walk in and sneeze and then leave.
Yeah.
Because a friend of ours, they've they had theirs, and it was like, I think it was like 2 hours, and they were in out done home.
Yeah.
The experience for us, I think, was quite, I would say, traumatizing. Not to an extreme degree, but like, it's almost like I probably remember it more than she does, because I think what happens with, again, I'm not a doctor, but I think what happens with when women give birth is, once they've given birth, that is such a rewarding experience that everything leading up to that kind of gets erased from your memory.
Yeah.
So I think I'm definitely still willing to have one, but for me, I'm a bit more like, whoa, remember what happened last time and stuff like that, but... And we've got a dog at the moment. It's a fucking nut job. So, like, we've currently got Elliot, and then we've got Frank. That's like having two kids anyway. So, yeah. So
Frank's been really good though, right?
Yeah, he has. He's been good because we've made sure that there's not been opportunities for any issues.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
He's a rescue, and there's obviously certain risks, not risks, but there's certain potential hazards that can come with that, like, and that's what we knew when we got him.
Yeah,
so we just take all the precautions we need to, just to keep some distance between him, because it's not necessarily Frank that's the loose cannon.
Yeah,
it's more that kids are so unpredictable. Like, with adults, we're very calm when we move and think, and he's used to us, whereas a child, small children, they're anywhere.
Yeah, sudden movement.
So we're trying to just keep more distance between them at this point in time until Elliot becomes a little bit more, until we can speak to him, I guess, really, until we can explain to him and teach him how to approach the dog.
Yeah.
Frank's just a bit skittish, and he doesn't give a fuck about who or what he runs over or on top of to chase a noise he thinks he heard at the back door.
Cool,
like we'll be sat, we'll be sat there. Well, barely. We'll be sat there watching TV, chilled. He's lay like in the corner, and like he'll. I don't know if he's like hears a cat, thinks he hears a cat, or sees a light or something. He'll bolt straight across us and just knock anything and everything over and stuff like that, which is annoying but fine for us as adults.
Yeah, of course.
If you've got a small kid there, he'll just bowl him over. He'll bowl an adult over if he catches you off guard, because he's an absolute lump.
It's all right if it's an end product though, but if he just gets there and he's like, come on, come on, nothing.
Yeah, he's so another kid is definitely a potential. I think it would be nice to have a boy-girl combo.
Yeah.
But obviously, you get whatever you get.
You get what you're given at the end of the day. Well, unless you've got the money to... but my little sister, she's got a boy and a girl. And I remember she said to me, I'm going to have my girl first. You know, then we're going to buy our house. And then we're going to have another one. It'll be a boy. And you know, and you're like, yeah, fuck off. Yeah, of course you will. Like, it literally panned out like that. It's just some people just have to...
Yeah, weird. It's weird, right? Because some people, some families, for example, seem to sway towards genders. So, like the Mudge family, there's a lot of boys. Mm. There's like two, maybe three girls that have been in the Mudge line for a while. Because my two of them are my aunts. Because my dad is one of five, I think. Two of which were sisters, obviously. There's not a lot of girls in our family. Emmy is she has a sister, and there's females on her side. So it was very interesting to see what would have happened when we found out the gender. But shocker, it was a boy. So
my mum had two sisters, seven brothers. Seven brothers. You know that. One of my good friends, he's got three girls. And his wife was badgering him. She's like, I just want to keep going. I, she was desperate for this boy, Harry. So they got pregnant again. Twin girls.
Oh, my, twins.
He rugged me, he's got twins, Smithy, he goes. And I went, congratulations, mate. He went, yeah, girls. That's like, well, you're just going to have to go again.
Oh, yeah. The problem with that as well is if you're like building it up to be like, I want a boy, or I want a girl, you know you're going to get the opposite one.
Yeah. Do you know what? I have really always been of the thing that maybe not when Lily, because I was young, 22 or whatever, but definitely as I've got older, you know, the amount of suffering, the amount that people have to go through to have children, I think realistically, if we're able to have children and it seems it's been relatively easy for us, then we're blessed anyway, I think. So yeah, big time. There's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah, and I remember when we were trying, when we were... Well, we weren't even... I class when we were trying from like January time. Mm. Or whenever it was. I think it was January anyway. Yeah, because we technically conceived in February. Valentine's Day, obviously.
Nice.
Of course, you know. But yeah, so... But before... So I class trying from January. And when we didn't get pregnant the first time, Emmy was like super disappointed because she felt like we'd been trying for like 6 months or more. But like we'd only... She was going from the moment we said, okay, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
But like for the first like 4 months, we were just saying whatever. It was only from January where we started doing things like ovulation tests and actually trying to time things. So I don't think it's fair to say that... I was surprised that she was so disappointed because it's like, well, we've not really been even... timing anything like that. I can't imagine how people feel when they've been getting the ovulation window, they've been doing everything and anything that they can to try and get pregnant and just not getting there. Because again, our friend that they've just had theirs, not to divulge too much information, but basically for one reason or another, they said that it would be quite difficult to get pregnant and they got pregnant in like 2 months as well. So when they found out that happened, because I think their plan was, well, we'll just keep going until it happens.
Yeah.
And it basically happened straight away. So it was, it timed it right really, because it's like only a few months difference.
With, I don't want to speak too morbidly, but when obviously we'd miscarried, that was when I kind of maybe thought about no more, because it was quite traumatic for Jen. And that's why I admire her a lot, really. She's so strong.
If you don't mind me asking, when did you know that, how did you know it had miscarried?
So Jen, because she'd had three girls, obviously, and everything was relatively the same, she did say to me, this just feels different. And I was just like, well, you know, just do the right things and it'll be okay. Like, you know, what else am I meant to say, really? Something wasn't right, obviously. Jen in the night had called me and we went, and you know, the hospital basically had said you've miscarried, so you'd have to go back a week later to make sure everything's, you know, gone, everything's okay with Jen. And then you feel really like helpless. It's like, what can I say? And nothing really. I don't think as a man you could truly understand how a woman feels about that anyway. But we went back the week later and they said they'd got it wrong and they'd found a heartbeat. So you've gone through that weak emotion of saying,
my God,
you've lost the baby, to then being told, actually, we got it wrong. There's your heartbeat. And, you know, so you walk out of the hospital and you're like, fucking hell, what's just happened, man? Like, but I put my arm around her and I think it's going to be all right. And you know, a couple of days after that, she miscarried, bless her. But, you know, it just wasn't meant to be for whatever reason that was. But I don't know, mate. You know, Ethel's here and maybe somewhere, whether you're just trying to think that in your head, but maybe somewhere that's living in within Ethel, and she's definitely a spirited little bugger, so.
Carried it through.
So, yeah, there's like two of them in there somehow, mate. But you know, like I say, I will always just say you need to be blessed with what we've got. And
100%. So we, listener of the show, John, he emailed in a while back, about the they went for a Down syndrome test and they were in the, I think it's the at risk bracket, which when you actually look at the numbers, it's still like less than 1% chance, but it's higher than the normal. He was like, what do you guys think and stuff like that. And we kind of said at the time, you just kind of got to take it as it comes, because the chance is still so small.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, that's one of, not to pile on it, but that's one of many other things that could be bigger issues. Like I say, we were thinking that there'd be no issues at all. And then all of a sudden at the final hurdle, everything got scary.
Yeah.
Well, fortunately, John's had his little girl now and there's been no issues. So it's amazing. But yeah, it's, Yeah, anything can happen. And just the, like, childbirth and having a child in general is just a miracle.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I think it beats anything, if I'm honest. Some days you might not get that answer from me, but realistically, it's the best thing.
It is big time. One of the things, obviously, the mother is with the child from zero, whereas we, for me anyway, the baby's born and then you begin building your relationship with them. So, like, for the first, I don't know, maybe a couple of months until Elliot started getting a bit of personality and, like, having a bit of character to him, even though it's still just pudding that doesn't do anything, they're not really anything for the first few months, right? But the more time you spend with them, they become people and you start bonding with them.
100%. But they say about a mother's love, isn't it? And, like, and just, it might be a bit weird, but that feeling for, like, Emmy and Jen and all the others, but, like, of having a baby grow inside you, like, that bond, man, like, that's really weird.
You can't even like begin to imagine what it feels like. It's crazy.
You feel the kick and it's just like a kick, isn't it? Like, but
thank you. Like it's just like it's kicking again. I'm like, ah.
Yeah, it's just a
great
kick.
Yeah, great.
I'll get kicked on a Sunday morning, like, down the park, love.
Well, like, I know it sounds like sort of ungrateful, but, like, to us, it really isn't anything right now. Like, like, we see it, but we're still waiting for it, sort of thing. So, like, there's no, like, the odd kick that we feel and stuff is not the same as what they're going through for 9 months every day,
exactly,
24 hours
that.
A day.
I don't think I could do it anyway.
No, definitely not. I mean, the thing I remember the most about when Emmy was in labor was just being fucking useless. And we had the I think it's the TENS machine.
Yeah.
So, like, she's got some, like, pads on her spine, and, like, it sends electric shocks or the equivalent to try and counteract contractions. And, like, that, I'm glad I had it because it was the only thing I could do. So I'm just there with this thing, like, dialing it up every so often. And as these contractions started getting more, I'm like, okay, I'll creep it up, creep it back down, keep it back up. And then, like, because it's on a scale to 100. So I'm like, I'm waving between 1 and 5. And then it's like 5 and 10. And by the end of it, I'm at like 60 something. I'm like,
have some of that.
And at one point, she's like chuffing on the gas and air. And she just turns and goes, turn that fucking thing down. Because I'm like, because obviously, as everything got more and more intense, I'm just like, just dial it up. This is all I can do. Dial this up.
What else are you meant to do? I remember with Lily, Jen actually bit my hand.
Shit.
So, like, she done it relatively drug-free, to be fair. But I remember, like, at one point, I looked at her and I thought, like, fucking, she's possessed or something. She was like, I can't do it. I was like, you can do it. I can't fucking do it. And then she's like, I can do it, I can do it. And then she's like biting my hand. I'm like, oh my God.
And you're like, I can't do it, I can't do it.
Oh, nurse, I can't do it. Do you want any toast? Yes, please. Yeah. Yeah. Need a cup of tea. Yeah. 6 sugars. It's amazing, mate. I'd do it again. I genuinely would go again, but financially and space and stuff like that is just not feasible.
Yeah, so like on the subject of space, so the house we live in, not to move on to real estate topics, but the house we're in is a great starter home. And we'll be all right for the three of us till Elliot's probably 5, maybe 7 at a push. But we've got to move at some point. And, like, I'm looking at it and think, just the idea, ignoring kids for a second, the thought of moving makes me just want to weep
so
into
annoying,
a pillow.
Isn't it?
But if we were to have another one, we wouldn't be able to stay in there too long because the lad that we bought it off, he had 2 kids, and I think he had 2 girls, and one was like 5, and the other was like 2.
Yeah.
So, but obviously they were in the same room, and there's just, like, as is technically a 3-bedroom semi.
Right.
One of the rooms, I can touch all 4 walls with 3 limbs. Like, it's tiny. It's like,
what, 3 limbs?
Any three, mate. Just lay it down on the ground.
Our first house that we moved into when Lily and Molly were born, it was a 2-bed cottage. And again, with that second bedroom, mate, there was the two cots were together and you couldn't fucking get in the middle like that.
Just, and we're just like, sling them in.
We need to move now. Jen's like, yeah, we do need to move. But yeah, I ain't got the space for anymore. So
yeah, it's a commitment.
100%.
And the thing is as well, like we've just bought a new car seat because Elliot's getting a bit bigger now for it. So we need a new one that hopefully will last him now until, well, the thing says up until 12 years old.
Yeah.
But I'm from a big family, so like I can see him last until he's about 6.
Yeah, and then he'd be lying in the passenger seat. What, Dad?
Be taking lessons soon.
Get in the back, Mum.
But yeah, so like, but cost, it's just, I mean, I think we spent like 200 quid on this new seat, but hopefully if it lasts him 4 years, 5 years.
Yeah, then you get your value, don't you? We just sold the buggy. It was our last buggy, if you like. And I said to Jen, I think she sold it on Facebook or whatever it was, Harry, 90 quid she got for it. And I was like, with all that, because it looked really good, actually. And I was just like, how much did all that cost us? And she was just like, oh, it was about £800 all in. You know, just like blasé like that. And I was, you know, you're thinking like, it's just a fucking buggy.
Yeah. It's, no one's trying to do anything, but the price tag on it all is just outrageous.
And then it got me thinking, I would love a spreadsheet of how much we've spent on the four girls.
Yeah, we've got a high chair, which is, so it started off as a, so it's called a Chico 4-in-1. I did a video review of it, actually. It's been really useful, but this was a thing that starts out as like a little cot that's adjustable, and then it eventually turns into a seat, and now we use it as a high chair.
Yeah,
and that, I think that cost us like 250 quid, which is pretty steep, but when you think how long it's lasted and it's been a single unit and we didn't then need to get a high chair and stuff like that, it's kind of covered its costs, really. So it's been that has been really helpful for us, because again, not only for us, not only is it the money, but it is the space. So like, yeah, exactly. Anything that can double up or transition into something else is an absolute winner for us. I had another note, mate, because you've got a few tats, and I'm a fan of tattoos as well myself. With your kids, first of all, will you let them get tattoos? Have you got anything against tattoos?
I don't have anything against tattoos. I think it's an expression. I'm a big fan of them. What I would say to the girls is, A, they need to be of a good age to have them.
Yeah.
And also, I think they need to be really, though it's a bit more acceptable now, I think once I had my hands done and my neck, not that you can see that, but, and my ear, and then I had a piercing in my ear. you still get judged. There is that judgment element. And I think, going forward, we don't know how the economy or whatever it may be with jobs. I think we need to be mindful of that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not opposed to it, but I would probably do things slightly different.
Because you've got that cool style where you've got that inked look.
Jeez, Harry.
Like I've got a few tattoos. I've got a Cheryl Cole,
nice.
And then I've got, so this was my first tattoo on my arm, which I had done again and made different because it was off of a wall, and I think I saw four people with it.
Yeah, like, those off the wall.
I'm gonna need this one changing. I remember. So my first one was, how old was that? I think it was like, I was like 16 when I had my first tattoo.
Yeah.
And so I don't regret any of them, but I regret not putting more thought into some of them and having a bigger picture. So for me, so the only reason I asked is because I wondered, knowing how stupid I was when I got mine, I was like, and for someone that's had enough to have enough experience in getting them, have you set boundaries let me flip it a sec. Have the kids asked about them yet?
Yeah, so like Lily would like one behind her ear, she says, and Molly would like one on her foot, but yeah, just I think all
how, the time, how old do they have to be before you let them have their first tattoo?
How old would I like them to be, or
how old do you hope they are when they come home with the first tattoo?
20. I can't see that happening. They do. They like piercings and stuff like that as well. But I think, like I say, it is in a way of expressing yourself. Mm-hmm. But I definitely think it's something you should really think about. Like, actually, out of all of mine that get the attention is my right leg. So all my girls, I said, all four of them can have my right leg. So any drawings that they've done as kids has been put on my right leg. And I had one done recently, and like Florence and Ethel have spelt like Molly Wog, it's M-O-L-Y and stuff like that. But it's, I think that's so cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's on my right leg. So I think express yourself in the right way, but think about it. These kids want everything now. It's like they don't want to wait for anything. But
yeah, something I've learned is to just think about things more.
Yeah, I think that comes with age.
Yeah, definitely. And I thought at the time when I got the tattoo, my first tattoo, that I thought I'd thought about it long enough. And the this one on my hand, which I kind of like. I wish it was better, but I like having it. I like having a tattoo there. I just wish it was a better tattoo. I thought about that for ages and tried to find something. And I was like, I think I was like 18, 19 when I did that. And I thought, oh, I'm responsible, I'm smart. But when I had it, the guy was like, I don't think this is going to go, mate. Because of where it is as well, and it's on the palm.
Yeah.
It's going to fade. I think I had it done like 4 times.
Yeah.
Fuck me, that was painful.
So I've had my palm done 6 times, and that was probably my favourite tattoo. So that was, obviously, you can see the reminiscence of an umbrella.
Yeah.
And it was rain, but that was like my whole hand. And it was when I first had it done, it was so dark, it was lovely. But that's all that you end up with left.
Wow.
And it's just like,
well, so the whole palm of your hand was like shaded.
My whole
shaded.
Palm of my hand was done, yeah. Wow. So it had like all raindrops and stuff, but yeah, all gone.
Did the guy that did it tell you that that might happen?
Yeah, so same guy's done all mine anyway. Sure. So he initially wouldn't do my hands, but because when I started having them, I worked in fashion, so it was cool to have them then anyway. That was acceptable. But as soon as you come out of it, was the other side of it, especially when you want to be taken seriously in like business, if you like. Yeah. It's a bit more, especially with where people say I look a bit intimidating or whatever. So
yeah, do you find that that's a specific type of person that's judging like that
though? Yeah, definitely. Yeah, agreed. But then, you know, on the other side of it now, I think it's used, I can use it to my advantage to make a difference. So it's all cool. But yeah, the girls need to think about it.
Yeah, if you're watching or listening, you're not allowed one yet.
No, exactly.
Sweet. I won't keep you too much longer, Steve, but I've been really enjoying this.
Thank you. And me too.
While you've got this platform in front of millions of people, do you want yes, with a B. Triple Comma Club, baby.
Yeah.
I know you're rocking the Men Talk swag today.
Thank you.
Positively dripping in it.
Yeah, literally.
Do you want to share a bit about that?
It's a men's mental health organisation, as you would know. We want to provide a platform for men to have better days and for the will to want to change. Men Talk's evolving slightly as well, and a passion for me personally is that I really want to get into schools, because I think if we can teach our kids that it's okay to be able to speak openly and honestly about how you feel, no matter what that may be, then hopefully, you know, when they have children and they have children, eventually that becomes norm. As adults, there's still a lot of stigmas attached to it. Mm-hmm. And every day it hurts that you can't break them all, you know, instantly. I know things take time, but I think the kids are the future. No cliche there, but so I'm really passionate about taking Men Talk into secondary schools in particular and trying to make a difference there.
No, that's cool, man. Have you sort of sat down with your girls and spoke about mental health and stuff like that? How do you talk about that and approach that with them?
I think because Men Talk's so flipping it out there, if you like, so, you know, they would have listened to stuff, and some of the stuff I'm uncomfortable with them knowing, because you want to protect them, but, you know, that is what it is. And they're very good communicators, so they're quite open to it. So I'm quite proud of them in that fact, actually.
Is that how you brought them up, or is it kind of something that you've kind of been able to introduce to them, if that makes sense?
Honestly, I don't know, Harry. I've always liked to... I'm probably quite a good communicator, I think. So I think it's probably something that they maybe have inherited. So they're really quite open and stuff like that. So I think really they can be torchbearers.
Yeah.
with it. They love Men Talk. They, you know, they'd like to get involved in some capacity. Who knows, in the future, you know, they might set up their own stuff and stuff like that. So I think that's the future for me. I'm desperate to do that, to really make a difference with these future generations.
Yeah, I mean, I know that like a support circle, however big or small it is, like just finding one or two people that you can talk about shit with. Yeah. Like I was saying before, like I can speak to my parents, but sometimes like your brother or other siblings or a close friend, like Adam, I've known for like 15, 16 years now. I'm able to like speak to him about things and talk to him and tell him, like, I know it's really hard telling people how you feel when you're not even sure how you feel, other than it's like, I'm not happy or yeah. I'm not feeling too sweet. So, but like just having someone that's not going to judge, I think is important, because obviously, as again, going back to what we were saying about at the start of the show with like social media and stuff, people's lives are, well, what you see online is exaggerated. Like everyone's 100%. Everyone's having a great time. And that's kind of why I just stopped using it. I knew that most of it was fake anyway, or just enhanced, should we say?
Yeah, but like best minute.
Yeah, exactly, best minute. But I just got a bit sick of... I realised, like, I actually don't want to hear about or see anything about it.
Yeah, agreed.
And I kind of understand the irony of, like, doing a podcast and talking about my stuff and stuff like that. But, like, I would like to think there's an element of real... to what we talk about, even though we like to have shits and giggles and stuff, like we're trying to just have fun about what we all go through. And like when people get in touch and stuff and ask questions and things like that, it's great to just like discuss these topics and chew the fat and have a laugh.
100%, man. If I could, I would. Facebook's my last social media.
Mm-hmm.
I'm desperate not to.
You mean
to
you're
have
not
it.
On TikTok, Steve?
I'm not on TikTok, mate. No. I've seen some of them TikTok videos and I'm like, nah, that's not me. I'd like to come off of Facebook if I'm totally honest. Yeah. But I don't want to diverse too much, but even around the mental health and stuff like that, you do see patterns in people when because I would have thought, you know, if you're going to come onto Men Talk, so the first thing you see is your feed, isn't it? So, yeah. You know, you'll have a scroll, see what people are up to. Something might put you in a particular mood.
Mm-hmm.
Then you come into a group which is mental health orientated, and it can dictate your mood, if you like.
Yeah.
But maybe it'll come full circle, you know. I don't know. I hope so. Like you say, it can be used for good, and there's a lot of negatives.
Yeah, it's the intention of it, right? And finding interesting. We had a conversation on a different show about like what's the solution for this in the future. Like after watching A Social Dilemma, because it kind of ends on a bit of a we're just getting started sort of note, and it was like what's the ideal future. Like we were asking ourselves, like how does Facebook become more of a tool that is a positive experience for everyone? And I think in general it is. It's just it's how you allow yourself to use it as a tool. Like I know, for example, I just straight up don't go on it. I like it's surprising how when you turn off badge icons and push notifications, how little you'll use something because it's not there.
Yeah, it's not present.
Tapping on the window saying, "Hey, come and check me out." But like my dad, for example, loves going on it, and because he takes loads of photos and he just uploads them because we've got family abroad and things.
Yeah.
So it's a great tool to be sharing across the world and with people and family and friends that you don't see on a weekly basis or anything. But yeah, how many times have you gone on it and just all of a sudden start? I remember I went on it to look for a woman that's going to do a cake for Elliot's first birthday.
Yeah.
Loaded up Facebook because I knew she had a Facebook page. And I was just on the feed scrolling. And it took me like a minute before I was like, what did I even come on here for? And you're like slapping yourself out of it. Like, oh no, I came to search for a page. But yeah, it's a slippery hole.
I think things like this though, podcasts and, you know, and when we're with our friends, I think it's so important. Like today, like we've been present with each other, if you like. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. Mm-hmm. I think we need to get back to that. It's something really basic, I think, but it's something I think we've forgotten. You know, when we're with our friends and our family, or even people that we might not know, it's to be present. Yeah, I think if we can really be mindful of that and make that norm again, I think it make a huge difference, you know. I think it's really important. It's something I teach my girls anyway.
Yeah, I think that's why podcasts are blowing up right now.
100%. There's billions out here.
On that note, guys, all 7 billion of you, the planet, if you want to get in touch, you can email, if my mic works, you can email dadknowsbest@nbs.fm. Don't forget to like, share, comment, and subscribe. Steve, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I guess a bit lonely on here. Sometimes I try and do a show by myself, and I'm like, you know what? I'd rather not waste everyone's time.
If you need a partner, Harry.
Yeah, Adam's not pulling his weight anymore.
Exactly.
I'll definitely tap you up. Anyway, thank you so much for joining me, mate.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Guys, we'll speak to you next time.